How was Coldplay?
So last night, Coldplay concert in the middle of Game of Thrones episode, which I was actually surprised by the number of people there with Game of Thrones related shirts on. And I like
skipping the show,
screamed at all of them just to like be their friend, but nobody responded. One of the guys who's in the band was on the Red Wedding episode.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yep.
Which I totally and completely forgot about. And so at the beginning of the concert, they introduce everybody, and I can't remember the guy's name, but they introduce everybody, and they introduce him as being from Westeros. And I was like, LOL, Game of Thrones, like, what a funny joke. Very relevant because the episode's on right now. And then at the very end of the concert, they talked about how he was in the Red Wedding, which I thought was really funny, and that got a good scream from the crowd.
Are we doing the episode right now?
I don't know.
What do you think? You think that's a good way to start it?
Sure.
Let's just go with it.
This is not my podcast.
He's like, this is not my show. I don't care.
I haven't done hundreds of these, literally.
Today is Monday, August 7th. It's the day after, I just want to call it the Field of Fire.
2.0.
But it's the Spoils of War, a.k.a. the Loot Train.
Loot Train.
Can you believe that?
Which part?
The loot. Yeah, which part of the episode? The Loot Train thing is just cracking me up.
The fact that it's called that?
Yeah. I just feel like it was right there.
Like right after the episode, you mean when it was underneath the title card and it said, mm-hmm. Stay tuned for a peek at the Loot Train.
Just in case we didn't know what to call it. Yeah. Here you go.
I was glad that we had that supplied to us.
Well, the Hype Train. The fandom like handed them this amazing name for this battle and they just decided that it was the Loot Train battle. It feels like some
That's true.
Wild West. I don't make the rules.
This is Game of Thrones. We're so happy that you're listening. We usually record these episodes on Sunday night, but this is a special occasion. We've got a guest on the show.
Hi, I'm Haley Bowery. I'm in the band The Manimals. We are, I guess, Game of Thrones adjacent because we have a Song of Ice and Fire concept album called Seven.
And thank you for playing Con of Thrones.
And we played at Con of Thrones.
And mm-hmm. for the party on Saturday as well.
Yeah, we did. We played twice at Con of Thrones.
That was awesome.
Unexpectedly.
That was so cool.
So
thanks
fun.
For having me. Well, and we also had one of your songs on our early episodes this season behind our own segment.
Yes.
We're supposed to be talking about this episode, but I have so many things that I would love to talk to you about musically, mostly regarding Seven. But I just want to say thanks for doing that, because when we introduced that segment, the first owns segment of the season, there was just something about that introduction when the snare and the drums came in. Mm-hmm. I saw the rest of like the season and the owns, and I saw that all sort of came together mm-hmm. based off of that. And it was beautiful because it's a long song that you wrote about Bran.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
I think I imagined Bran being a lot more compassionate and human by the end. I wrote this record between seasons 5 and 6. It was very different then. So
Bran was actually a character then.
How do you guys feel about, because I know that we've gotten, there's so much to talk about. Whoa.
Back up.
I know that we've gotten, for example, early in this episode, Bran had his heart-to-heart with Littlefinger.
Yeah. You can call it that, yes.
No heart to no heart.
And I feel like the issue of where his sense of self is, I think we've got our answer, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he says stuff like, oh yeah, chaos is a ladder, huh?
Kind of loved that.
So what's going on with Bran?
I don't know. I do want to see him mess with Littlefinger psychologically.
Mm-hmm.
I was so surprised by that, because just on our last episode, we were saying that Baelish might be the worst person in Westeros besides Roars or Biter to come face to face with someone who can just look into your past and see all the lies that you've told.
Yeah.
And then early in this episode, he sought out Bran to have that conversation, to give him that gift. So when I think about what Arya said later in the episode, saying, oh, he didn't, or not, what Sansa said, like, oh no, he's not generous. He didn't give Bran that Valyrian steel dagger for fun.
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys think Littlefinger is trying to do with Bran?
That was going to be my question for you. Because that's one of the big questions that I came away from that specific scene was, not only did Bran completely own him, to borrow a phrase from our podcast, what is it that Littlefinger was trying to get out of him and establish some sort of relationship with him? And he gives him cat's paw, and he also calls him Lord Stark. And he's very much, I think, we see Littlefinger a lot this season grasping at straws in an attempt to gain more of a solid footing here in Winterfell and to be somebody who has influence, because Sansa is dismissing him left and right. And so I think that this, to him, is going to be some sort of gesture to get Bran to trust him or appreciate him or see things his way. You know, I'm not sure. I don't know if he necessarily, I mean, he obviously hasn't spent a lot of time with Bran. Otherwise, I think he would have probably played it a little bit differently. I mean, having one conversation with him and you know that Bran's not going to react warmly to anything. So
he looks him in the face and goes, oh, chaos is a ladder.
Yes. And you look at Peter's face in that moment, he kind of flinches back a little bit for very obvious reasons. But I liked it. This is my first moment of liking deadpanning Bran because it was awesome. Working in our favor.
Right. I don't want to see him treat his sisters like that, but damn. Like, there's no, I mean, Littlefinger, what is his purpose right now in Winterfell at all? They definitely don't need him to keep the veil.
Yeah, like, Jon Royce is there. He doesn't like Littlefinger
totally
at all.
Totally unnecessary. Yeah. He's just hanging out smirking on terraces.
Yeah.
That's all.
Following Sansa around.
Well, yeah, and we were talking about that. It's still slightly mysterious to me. I don't know if I'm reading what he said to Sansa last episode before they cut to Bran, you know, when he was telling her the stuff that sounded like, you guys tweeted at us about him being on acid or something.
Yep.
And then he shared his stash with Bran, apparently.
Right.
And it's just kind of wearing off now. And so now they're having their heart-to-hearts and exchanging weapons. No, but for real, what was I going to say?
Littlefinger and Bran are coming down off acid together.
But I was unsure if it was misdirection on the show's part, because with the Starks coming into their own this powerfully, with Arya entering Winterfell so confidently and having the sense of presence that she has to stand in front of Brienne and like sort of mock Brienne for like not understanding how cool she is, just a little bit. And the same with the guards.
Oh, yeah.
For all of these Starks to walk in, to have this kind of presence and power now, is it on accident that we're feeling like Littlefinger is so silly? Or is that what they're trying to do? Are they trying to transition Littlefinger away from being someone that we respect to being someone that's like silly?
I don't know
what's happening.
I don't know that that's really helpful story-wise, though. I don't know where they're going. But yeah, it's like this whole castle is now run by a bunch of kids who are all badasses. Mm-hmm. And you just have this dude hanging out still.
Yeah, he's like, but I'm gonna go talk to Bran because Bran might be the Lord.
But he used to be so formidable because you didn't know what his game was, really. Mm-hmm. It seemed like he was capable of any kind of maneuver, and now I have no idea what his resources are.
I just feel like Littlefinger has been, whether or not you like all of his decisions, he's been at the top of his game, and he's been smart and pretty savvy throughout this whole thing, this whole series. And I just feel like now he's just kind of turned into this, not comic relief, but almost, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's so silly. And that's the word that we've been using because that's the only way I know how to describe him right now. And to me, it's a shame that he, I don't know. I'm kind of grumpy about this whole episode, so I'm trying to like keep it
really
under wrap. But this plays into it a little bit, which I'm just kind of bored with this a little bit. And this, like, we get it. You guys are besting Littlefinger. We get that he's not at the top of his game anymore, that he loves Sansa. We understand it. Thank you. To me, he's like, his character is too big to go down in the way that they're portraying it in the show. And not that Sansa and the Starks bringing him down is a small thing, because that's this something that we've been waiting for. But I just feel like the way it's being done, we get it. And I'm kind of ready for it to be finished.
I want them to bring down peak Littlefinger, not this one.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes.
So true. Yeah. So true.
I totally agree.
Snaps. Haley, what did you think? Because I feel like we just touched on it with Hannah, and I'm going to circle back so hard. What did you think, if you could talk about this episode, the Spoils of War as a whole? I know that
as a whole,
there was so much emotion. This was one of the. Just wanted to say, I don't know if you agree, but I think it's one of the most impressive marvels of television ever.
Yes, there are a bunch of things. There were things that I was incredibly emotional about too,
like just Bronn looking like himself the whole episode.
Just his beautiful face brought me to tears. Yeah, I mean, like, there were some issues with Winterfell stuff, but I feel like I cried through everything Arya did. Mm-hmm. And that Mira and Bran scene was pretty depressing.
Oh, so brutal.
Yeah,
but I mean, obviously, the centerpiece of the episode of, as in like the loot train battle.
Can we not call
was
it that?
The most incredible thing.
Can we call it like the battle for the loot train? Something
train.
Crazy, you know?
That was so just incredible looking and exciting. And that was like a sequence where I felt really like gripped by the show. Mm-hmm. And I think I was saying after watching it that, you know, I really don't like battles. And that's actually something that probably kept me from watching a show like Game of Thrones right when it started, and why I avoid some fantasy too, just because the battles aren't interesting to me.
Right.
And this was definitely my favorite battle.
What was different about it with the other stuff? Did you like it more than the other fights in the show? Is that what you're
yes.
saying?
I thought it was the best looking.
It was amazing.
It was really exciting.
Jamie, just because it was well done.
Mostly because I'm
on the Jamie side.
Jamie looked great. But he was, yeah, prime form.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of it had to do with the character stakes and just that mm-hmm. we're at a point in the story where I didn't know who was going to win or lose. Like, you kind of like forgot who's sort of like protected by plot armor at this point. And like, what if, like, I mean, I didn't think she would, but Dany could have died at a moment. And that was pretty crazy.
Did you also feel like you didn't know who to root for?
Right. So it wasn't just not knowing who would win. It was also, yeah, like, I really love Jaime so much. I love Jaime and Bronn. But yet, I guess we're supposed to be rooting for the
Tarly's.
Dragon side.
mm-hmm. You've been talking about it for years, what it would eventually look like when these forces started to come together and our friends were fighting our friends, and how it would feel to have our emotions split. So
right
now to you and Hannah and to all of our listeners at home, it just happened.
It just happened.
We got to see Bronn and Jaime with like the heroic charge toward Daenerys. I'm rooting for Jaime to be a hero.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Amazing.
Look at him. He's a glittering hero.
Tyrion's looking on. He's like, you fucking idiot.
But of course, Jaime would run straight there. You know, of course that's something that Jaime would do. And it was such this unbelievable moment to have Tyrion just mumbling under his breath what an idiot Jaime is as he's charging full force
towards
a dragon where Dany is standing. You know, it's just that whole scene just felt like everything coming together. And that was easily one of my favorite parts of the episode that I just kind of replayed over and over and over again because it was just so unbelievable. And you're on the edge of your seat cheering and you don't know who you want to win in that charge, you know, and you want Jaime to succeed because we're coming around to Jaime and he's been the human face of the Cersei camp. And then you also want Dany to win because she finally made it here and she has dragons and she is Daenerys Targaryen. And so it's really cool to be able to feel that tension. And I think that they did it, as kind of Haley was describing, they've done it really well with this battle. And it felt much more than just a fight. It was this very emotional thing as well.
I was so impressed by their decision to enlist Matt Shackman to work on this episode, to work on the show at all. His past work on Fargo, I know that the writers of the series are big fans of what Noah Hawley's doing with that series, and so that sticks out. And also David and Dan being so connected with the Always Sunny sort of realm, having had a cameo appearance, and they're kind of two vastly different entities, but I feel like what they're doing with that program generates the kind of fan furiousness, ferocity that Game of Thrones does as well, but for a totally different thing. So and this is nothing poor against the early directors of Game of Thrones, but we're not getting Alan Taylor or Alex Graves or David Nutter, these people that have established the look of GOT and that we're so sure that they can play in this medieval atmosphere. We're not getting them to do those episodes later in the series. They enlist a guy like Matt Shackman, who as a director moves so many different, I've only watched Always Sunny a handful of times with my friends, and every time I watch it, it's so complicated, and there's so much trickery with all the characters, and it's so, I don't know, it's really cool, and I love the intensity of the fan base. So to have him, I feel like, bring that presence into this episode, I think is why maybe we like the battle so much, because in a fight that was so gratuitous and filled with amazing effects, amazing choreography, there's so much, we could fill the podcast for 3 days just about the level of detail and the blocking, the list goes on. But the emotions that I felt watching it as being connected to characters and the spaces they were in, like when Bronn was running from the Dothraki screamer, the wagon like comes by and like the wagon like blocks his path. I just felt like I was there. Like I understood that he needed to ride around it to go get him. And I understood that Bronn was like pissed off about the gold and he was going through his own set of problems and Jaime was going through his and Dany's going through hers. And then Tyrion walks up on the hill like it's Lord of the Rings and he's watching the battle down below. And I'm like, that's Tyrion Lannister up there. It's like you said, Hannah, it all came together and it had to be like one of those moments like Hard Home or like The Door.
Yeah.
When we learn about Hodor or about the children, you know, when they're pushing it. It's like it was one of those moments.
For sure.
Well, even from the beginning when they hear the horses over the hill and they don't 100% know what's actually happening and what's going on. And you hear the screaming in the distance and it starts to piece together who's coming over the hill there. And your heart starts beating so fast. I mean, the Dothraki are charging on Jaime Lannister and his army.
Oh my God. Yeah, it looked like he was about to get it.
I really thought we were going to lose a really major player in this. So the fact that we got through to the end and it didn't happen, it was still like that intense. Jeez.
I mean, we're due for it, but I just think that Jaime just isn't, there's no way.
Not yet.
This is not his time.
And not in that battle.
Yeah.
I know that it was so epic, but it was called the Loot Train, and it was just on the road somewhere.
Right, just like they just got like bombed on the road by a dragon.
Which is so fun because it gives me hope for, you know, we know that the Battle of the Green Fork or, you know, these big, huge things that like have mythos surrounding them. Like we know that there's epic stuff there. And we know that when you sack King's Landing, the Battle of Blackwater Bay looks like this and we're going to put X amount of dollars into it. And there's going to be extras and effects and stuff. But they had a string of the most gorgeous dragon visual effects, not small shots, not a few of them, but we're talking like gratuitous stretch of the episode. Dany sometimes just turning corners for the hell of it.
My God, it was beautiful.
Amazing.
I could watch that dragon all day and I usually hate that because it usually looks really bad. This was, I think, like this was some of the best CGI I've seen ever in anything. I'm not sure if that's true, but like maybe there's some movie out there but it was great. Jeez.
And for it to be done on the road, on a loot train, and like I said, and not
keep saying that one.
Yeah, keep saying loot train.
Let's call this episode train. Loot train. No. For it to be on a loot train and not in King's Landing, and for it to look like this, like let's have that dragon and Dany and that Jaime and that Tyrion and that Dickon Rickon. Let's have that in King's Landing where it's epic, you know. Where, but no, let's just sell it on a dirt road somewhere. We're gonna put all the money into it. That's gonna be the set piece for this episode. They're just gonna fall. It just makes me feel more confident toward the end of the series because, you know, this is a high fantasy world and it's not always going to be at the castle. Like Daenerys might just fly in and take you guys unawares. And because we're so deep in the story and we're through so many points of view, chances are the random brigade that she attacks is going to have people like Jaime in it and Bronn in it. And they might die.
Right.
It's crazy. And this is
only just that few people left.
I know.
It's crazy.
When someone washes up on the shore, it could be Theon Greyjoy. And when he's there, he could be face to face with someone that he grew up with that wants to kick his ass.
Oh, yeah.
You never know.
Something that I had completely forgotten that they would even see each other again when they did. But yeah.
And I don't know if you guys are disappointed, but it doesn't look like Gendry rescued Theon.
I know.
It wasn't on the boat at all. So
no.
Too bad.
Someday.
We would have like a good lingering ab shot, I think.
Yeah, we would.
He was on the boat. Mm. They know what we want.
They do know what we want. I mean, did you see this episode?
Yep. There was a lot of that. Yeah.
So what are we going to talk about, Hannah? Because I know we're going to spend time on this battle, whether it's more in this episode or more so in our second episode of the week. But we haven't gotten to talk yet. What are your feelings? I don't know your feelings.
My feelings are everywhere. You mentioned Theon arriving and the two of them having their reunion together. And that was, with a lot of great reunions in this episode, that may have been my favorite, just because the two of them, the weight of that, the look on Theon's face, and when Jon tells him what you did for Sansa is the only reason I'm not killing you. It's
real.
Been so cool and so fun, and I'm eating it up every second of all of these little moments that we get with these characters that we completely forgot have any reason to do with each other. You know what I mean? Until they're standing face to face, and all of a sudden, and I know we've been going through rewatch, and so that's been a great way to kind of keep some of this old stuff fresh. But to have Theon and Jon standing on the shores of Dragonstone talking about, you know, alluding to what Theon did to the Stark family. I just thought it was so powerful. And every moment and every character interaction, I feel like, has so much weight behind it. And I'm glad that they're kind of taking that care because it's important. I don't know.
What did you think about the episode?
Something that I kind of got in my head at the beginning that I really couldn't let go of this entire episode is, for maybe the first time in a long time, I have really felt sad that George R. R. Martin wasn't telling the end of his story. And I think that especially with Sansa and Arya's reunion here, that it just felt like a big weight on me. And I don't know if I need to get over it. For so long, I've been this huge proponent of let's let David and Dan play, tell the story how they want to, and let's enjoy the fact that we get to play in this space. And I've loved it, and I have loved this season so far. And, you know, we get more opportunity to spend time with these characters that we love through the books and through the TV show. But I just kind of felt sad that something like Arya and Sansa's reunion, even if they kind of checked all the boxes, I felt like that happening, not in necessarily the way that George R. R. Martin would particularly do it, was something that I just couldn't get out of my head this whole episode. And so it kind of put a little bit of a shadow for me on a lot of these moments, because I just feel sad that George doesn't get to tell that story. I don't know. And I don't know why that's happening right now, but I think that something like Sansa and Arya is something I've just anticipated since the end of book one. And so to see these big character reunions happen, like I said, even if they check all the boxes, even if I think it was done pretty well, we couldn't really have asked for anything more. I just have this feeling of like, I don't want to say,
like, it's not whole, maybe.
Yeah. And what I'm about to say, I don't really mean at all, but I don't know how else to say it. Is I feel like it almost cheapens it, which I don't mean that, because I love the show and I've loved what they've done. But I think I was just grumpy while I was watching this episode. And so I've had a hard time shaking that as we talk about Jon and Dany and their conversations, as we talk about Sansa and Arya and Bran, and, you know, all these different things to me were shadowed by this fact that we're really, really, really near the end.
Really near the end.
Yeah. I have that same feeling a lot about, I just have like this sadness about George not getting to finish his story on his terms. And that, you know, I think that the show is doing a good job in so many ways, but you know that they are just trying to get pieces into the right spot. So there is probably some depth lost by some of these characters reconnecting. And yeah, I want something like as important as Arya coming home to, you know, just have all the resonance it can.
Well, how did you feel about it, about the meeting?
I could have, there's maybe something missing for me with Arya and Sansa. I liked her coming, I mean, her coming home and with the guards was great. And I actually really liked her and Brienne. I thought that was sweet.
Yes, yes.
And it was a cool little fight. But I don't know. I feel like Sansa's kind of like a little bit of a cipher for me, like how she is in the show, maybe.
What are they doing?
I don't know.
You know?
It's like what we were talking about with Littlefinger. Like, I'm just totally confused by the plan there. And Sansa is connected with Littlefinger. So
yeah.
I think everything that she's doing is a little odd.
What are they doing? Arya walks up to Brienne. The way that she entered the sparring with Brienne and Podrick, when they cut to Brienne and Podrick, I felt like they had been at Winterfell training for weeks. It was just so natural. Mm-hmm. Like, Gwendolyn Christie, oh man, she killed it with her face.
Yeah.
Killed it.
Yeah.
Same with Daniel. Like, they are so good together. I felt like the time that they had spent, chances are it's probably from how much time they actually do spend with each other.
Mm-hmm.
But when Arya walked up, I felt like that was the perfect, that's exactly what Arya would have done.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly what she would have said, all of it.
Yeah. I just liked their little mutual respect. And it was, I like seeing Maisie smile.
Yeah.
Just warms my heart.
We got to see a taste of it in season four when she was standing with the Hound and Arya was so suspicious. And we were like, just talk to her and appreciate her and have fun with her. You guys would get along so
just
well.
Smile, you'll love it.
And it finally got to happen. And Arya,
killed it.
She brought, finally, you know what I mean? Like, she it's okay. So she's going to be the best person. Like, she's going to outfight most people now, right? She's got the water dancing and the faceless assassin skill set entwined into one.
Yeah.
When Brienne asks who taught her how to do what she can do, and Arya says, no one.
Everyone at home, like, claps.
Yeah. They know what we want.
With Sansa looking on.
Yeah, so what do you think about that?
Sansa looking on. I was not a fan.
See, I liked it.
Really?
I mean,
her reaction was so weird.
Is she doing it for her? Is it for real, or is she doing it for Littlefinger?
I mean, I think that Sansa is probably surprised by Arya. And you know, we see that a little bit earlier in the episode when Arya mentions her list. And Sansa kind of laughs. Like, are you serious? You know, not quite understanding. I don't think that older Arya sister things. Has killed people.
Of course you want to kill people. He's so cute.
Yeah. Like, and so to me, I think that, like, all of Sansa's reactions to Arya in this episode are her coming to the realization and understanding that Arya is this assassin, and that she has been through and has done unbelievable things. And so that's kind of how I see her watching Arya in this battle. As she practices with Brienne. Brienne is an incredible swordsman. And to have somebody like Arya with her little needle, with her hand behind her back, completely dominate the scenario is pretty unbelievable. And I think that that's just a big moment to show everybody, and especially Sansa, that Arya is legitimate, and they both have grown in unbelievable ways that neither of them can really fathom. And this is kind of a taste for it. So that's kind of how I read that scene. I don't know why Littlefinger has to be there, but he is. Yeah. Sansa is killing it as the Lady of Winterfell.
Oh, sure.
And so I think that her skill set, she can't read weird visions, and she is didn't come back to life, and she can't kill people with her tiny sword.
Yeah,
yeah. But I think that she has, and I am such a, everybody who's listening already understands that I just defend Sansa to the death. So I'm going to make excuses. I think that her ability to run Winterfell and to kind of prep Winterfell for what they're about to see, and to take care of her people and to be this incredible lady, I think that it's not the same skill set, and it's not like cool by any stretch of the imagination. But I do think that, like, she has grown into that role that just isn't quite as flashy as what some of her other siblings have.
I think it's cool. Yeah. I love logistics.
Yeah, and none of them want to.
I love logistics.
Rule
too.
At Winterfell. Like, so.
Not only do they not want to, but they wouldn't be as good as her. And come time, like you said, Hannah, come time for the proof to, I don't know, work its way out of the pudding. The stores and the grains that she was talking about with Littlefinger when they were overlooking the fight. All of that stuff is going to be so much more important than someone greedily fighting in a battle. You know what I mean? They're like taking down people. It's gonna matter more. And maybe that's a really cool thing, because it does seem really Martin-esque to go, look at all these wonderful plot points, someone who's been in Braavos and trained and done all this wonderful stuff. And you've got Jon Snow, who's Jon Snow. Bran is, you know, he's doing his stuff. There's lots of
Bran is, you know,
whatever.
Let's also glorify the fact that our keep has lots of food and strong walls and, like, bright torches and room for all the people from the north to come, and it's all taken care of.
Right.
That seems like a Martin thing to go, this is also cool. Let's get hype about that.
That's true, yeah. You know? Like, yeah, Arya, like, killing one person or five people actually doesn't. The thing that Sansa's doing is more long-sighted.
Right.
That's what's so great about the two of them as sisters, is that they both have these completely different skill sets that are just as equally important to the story as a whole. So I like seeing them back together.
I saw a tweet last night that had a picture of the Stark children together from the new promotional stuff that I think Anne Leibovitz took for Vanity Fair. It said the wolves are circling Littlefinger. The pack is, and I'm thinking about all the Stark children, about what he did to their fucking parents.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hell yeah.
It's going to come down.
But I'm also annoyed that it's not peak Littlefinger.
Yeah. Still want that peak Littlefinger.
Maybe we'll get it.
Maybe he'll do, like, something super evil, and then we'll be ready for the wolves to get him.
Or all he's done is given Bran and then Arya, who is an amazing fighter, Valyrian steel that she's going to be able to use against the White Walkers. So far, all that he's done in Winterfell is bring the troops to help them, and to give them a priceless weapon.
Right.
And to say a lot of crazy stuff.
Yeah. He's also, he's just, he's on that northern peyote.
Yeah.
/ ayahuasca. What's he doing?
Oh, God.
What are they doing? When they were walking above that fight. Strange. That was, I don't know.
Someone killed Littlefinger 2K17.
Yeah.
Anyone. We get it.
It like cuts back to a flashback of Ned holding Littlefinger against the wall. It's like, we didn't need that strong of a flashback, but okay, fine.
Do you think that we're too far in it to appreciate this kind of stuff? Or do you think that, as we were talking about last night, they are being too heavy-handed?
We've never been called a program that's overly critical for the sake of it. And I know that you love the show, Hannah, and I know that you loved the episode too, Haley, and I know that I did too. I think that there's something to be said for a show that is pushing the bounds in so many ways to not also, I guess, trust its audience as much as they did in the early days when George was primarily the pen behind the paper.
Right.
It's just, I feel like the lessons and the things that they're trying to communicate for the, it's not being done as subtle to match as good as the show is.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's such an amazing, did you see that, that battle at the end?
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Yeah. I like cheered after this episode. So I obviously really loved it and I'm being nitpicky.
Do you feel like you're being nitpicky?
Not dishonestly, you know, it's genuine. It's just, I don't know.
I don't like watching two amazing actors on a set that's probably the best of it of its kind ever, walking around a cave, looking at stuff that should mean so much to me.
Yeah.
And then just being kind of feeling out of it because of...
Can we talk about
the cave? I think
we need to. Yeah. We need to.
This actually was probably the thing I thought was the dumbest. Like, we're talking about, like, Sansa and Littlefinger on the... like, whatever.
That is nitpicky. But this is... Yeah.
Nitpicky. This is not nitpicky. That was... The cave was ridiculous to me.
The cave of wonders.
Yeah.
Did you guys see all those tweets after of people saying that John had went into the cave before with some chalk and drawn some scribbles and then brought Danny and was like, look at these insane drawings.
Totally now that. I'm into it. Now I'm into it, for real.
Yeah, and then it was like, that's why they're so sophisticated.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that looks exactly like the White Walker you killed, John, at Hardhome. Do you remember? And the White Walker with the holding up the rock ensemble.
Oh, yeah, well, throwing up some devil horns.
Yep. So, Hannah, what did you think? We haven't got to talk about this yet.
The whole time I was thinking and / yelling / my notes are in all caps say, are they going to kiss right now? Because
for no reason.
I just felt like I was like, is this the moment here? Like, is this what they're trying to set up here? And that tension was there and I was just confused. And
I know there's not. Sorry.
Yeah, you go.
I was just going to say, I know there's not a lot of time. There's not a lot of time to get these people together. And if that's the plan, they have to do it somehow. But this, to me, like, rewatching it, I was just like, someone, like, directed Emilia Clarke to use her sexy voice now. Like, yeah. And just, I don't know. It was just like, come on. I just, like, don't buy it, like, that's happening for either of them at this moment.
Yeah, and I know that we joked about it a lot. And I feel like I've talked about this and are kind of into this whole, like, Danny and John, LOL, what a great ship. But sometimes in practice, I don't, you know, we can joke about it and think it's funny and, like, but sometimes in practice and kind of the way it's coming across, it just feels, again, like, very heavy-handed. And do I think that the two of them have a lot in common that could lead to some sort of romantic relationship? Absolutely.
For sure, yeah.
Absolutely. For sure.
I mean, they're kin, for God's sakes. They share so much.
But when Danny, to me, I thought when Danny asked John for advice on what she should do, to that me, was that was so the awesome. Coolest moment between the two of them.
Yeah.
And that, to me, showed the weight that their relationship could have, because that's a big thing. And Danny just turned to John and said, what do you think I should do?
And he
that
gave the best really advice great. Of the series so far.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Jaw dropping. Yeah. Real shit.
Mm-hmm.
You're not he just a sword it. And shield. Like, that's not what he, you know what I mean? Like, and Daenerys knows that now.
Mm-hmm.
So
and
cool.
I like that more than let's look at these cave paintings that we don't know what the spirals mean, but we know they're out there.
They really want us to care about spirals, though.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know if you guys read it differently, but that's kind of that moment between the two of them when Danny asked for John's advice was the coolest moment between the two of them, easy, that we've seen this
it.
Season
I
so
could have
far.
Taken a lot more of that kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
and I would be way more on board with the two of them getting together. Because, yeah, it just seems like a scene in the cave. Like, I know there was some important things they were talking about, but it really just seemed like, let's put them in a sexy environment, like with good lighting, and let's just look at how pretty these two people are. And it just, when there's so much there that could be mined, that they, yeah, that they have in common.
Like the dragon glass?
Literal mining of dragon glass.
He's like, I want to show you something before we blow it all to bits.
Yeah.
That was cool.
He definitely drew those.
Yeah.
So funny.
I really like Emilia Clarke and Kit Harington together. I think that John and Danny, it's such a, it might be the most compelling duo on the show. I'm here for it. I'm riveted when they're on screen. That's okay if you don't agree.
They have amazing chemistry.
Weirdest face of you. they have good chemistry. But honestly, because when they have a scene where, when he gives her advice, it's awesome.
So good, yeah.
They're great. Yeah, that stuff's great.
I agree. And I like they're supporting, they're friends as well. Like Davos and Missandei. I mean,
yeah, they have some good sidekicks, sidekick action.
I have a feeling that whenever she starts to warm up to him, that she's that they're going to be the best friends.
Well, when Missandei is talking about how she really believes in Danny and Davos is like, will you forgive me if I switch sides to John? Love it.
It's good.
And when he was speaking of a good hearts or whatever.
He's so flirty. It's they're so walking cute.
Because he's like, oh, yeah, I saw you staring at her great heart or whatever. And they have their talk and it's funny. And he sees her and goes, speaking of good heart.
Adorable.
Davos rocks.
Yeah, it was funny. And it's all good spirited. So it's fun to have that exercise. I don't want to let go of the caves, though. I just want to say, why hasn't anyone ever told us about that before? That cave right there in Dragonstone. That
wide open cave.
Has all the answers to the whole series right there. I mean, and did you see those White Walkers with the blue cave painting materials that they...
You'd think Stannis at some point would have...
Melisandre.
Yeah, they're both pretty interested in these things.
Yeah.
I think that they would have known.
So she knew about the White Walkers and all that stuff beforehand. We can assume she can see in the flames and see the future. Yeah. Maybe she saw her mistake with Stannis, with Jon. The list goes on, maybe not. We don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
Is her trickery saying that she can't really see into the flames, or maybe the Red God or the children, whoever it ends up being, we need Tony Teflon for this. Whatever they're showing her is the truth, and it's a limited scope, and so she doesn't have the full picture, fine. But she lived in Dragonstone, and that cave basically had all the answers and the stuff that you used to kill them with.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
So the Children of the Forest lived as far south as Dragonstone, possibly, I guess, potentially the entire continent of Westeros. We need to call up Aziz and Ash and Sean.
I mean, and that's wild.
Yeah.
You think about the First Men either sailing to Westeros or being symbiotic with them. And you think about Jon's line and showing how they were always together to fight the White Walkers. Historically, I don't think that that's accurate at all, but I think it makes sense. As far as the story that he's telling her, it's just it felt like it just needed to happen. But when stuff happens naturally, like the moment between John and Danny, like out of necessity for the sake of that conversation, less so for the sake of storytelling beats and people at home, like remembering the spiral patterns that were made by the Children of the Forest that the White Walkers are paying homage to and laying bodies in that pattern. Mm-hmm. And in case you forgot, we have a clip after this episode's credits.
Yep.
And we're going to tell you exactly how we feel about that subject.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think that's what I'm trying to get at when I talk about how I feel sad that George R. R. Martin isn't telling his story. Because I understand how these things are important for the end game. We don't have a lot of time. It's a different medium. And so things are going to be delivered differently. But something like finding out whether or not it is actually true that Children of the Forest were all the way in Dragonstone, or basically everything that you just said, Zach, getting that from a show's perspective, whether or not it's actually accurate, getting the weight in that history, it doesn't feel
fanfic, you can say it.
Okay, that's what I want to say. It feels like fan fiction, and I don't hate it necessarily because I love fan fiction, but I just, it makes
Plus
me
it's awesome.
Feel, yeah, and it pulls me out of it a little bit. And like I said, this kind of weight of this story being told differently for whatever reason, this specific episode bothered me.
It's not bad, and we're not some decorated, staff of critics that can dive into it and tell you for all these soulful reasons why it didn't check so many boxes. But for me, just watching it as a person, I feel like getting that preview about the dagger and just how heavy it was and how heavy we're being taught the when I saw the spirals on the cave wall, I was disappointed. I felt hurt because the magic behind how the world operates is my favorite part about Song of Ice and Fire. And when we got that reveal in season 6 about their genesis, how the White Walkers were created, there was nothing cheap about any of that. It was so good.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with that.
So what's happening here, you know? Is this how we're supposed to find out about it?
No.
I think the people who are going to listen to this podcast and us are removed from this, but I just think that things like the spirals and the fact that Chaos is a Ladder is a callback to Littlefinger and what Catspaw Dagger actually is. I think that still, you know, 80% of people who are watching Game of Thrones are still just casual viewers. And so they have to balance that somehow because, you know, I go into my office on Monday morning and everybody wants to talk about A Song of Ice and Fire or everyone wants to talk about Game of Thrones. And I'm so excited about everybody coming into my office with all their different theories. And I sometimes, very oftentimes, feel like we're watching a different show. And I don't think that that's necessarily bad. I just think that it's a lot of work to appease different audiences. And whereas before we had the books to continue to have this depth to it, and we can argue about the way that that's translated onto the screen, but now we don't have that same weight behind it. And I think that they're doing the best that they can, but
that's a really great point.
It's a much different experience for us as book readers or as people who are in it in our day to day versus people who are just watching the show and who have just been waiting 7 seasons to see Drogon burn everything to the ground. Don't blame them because same. But it's just, it's a much different experience. And I have felt more than any other season the divide between a casual show watcher and people like us who have no lives outside of Game of Thrones.
This is accurate.
This week's episode is brought to you by Stitch Fix.
If you're like a lot of guys, you could probably think of a million things you'd rather be doing than shopping for clothes. Between the parking and crowds at the mall and the endless browsing and lack of advice online, it's enough to make you want to rock the same t-shirt and jeans forever. But you can't. So let me tell you about Stitch Fix Men.
They've reimagined how to find and buy clothes, and you never even have to leave the house. It's that easy. Just go to stitchfix.com and tell them your sizes, your favorite types of clothes, and how much you want to spend.
Your personal stylist then gets to work handpicking new clothes for you based on your style and based on your budget. 5 items are delivered right to your door. You try them on at home, and you only pay for what you keep.
Shipping's free both ways, so anything you don't want, just send it back. And exchanges are always free, too. You can get your fix monthly, quarterly, or whenever you feel like it. There's no subscription required.
It's easy. The shipping is free. Why not give them a try? I promise you'll be hooked.
Get started now at stitchfix.com/owns, and you'll get an extra 25% off when you keep all 5 items in your box.
That's stitchfix.com/owns to get started today. stitchfix.com/owns. Today's show is sponsored by Blue Apron.
Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. For less than $10 a meal, they deliver seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients right to your door.
And in these summer months, fresh ingredients are arguably more important than ever. And with our traveling schedule for the podcast, it has been very convenient to pick days that will be gone or weeks that will not be home, respectively, not to have a shipment of food left for us.
Blue Apron is completely flexible, so you can customize your recipes each week and choose a delivery option that fits your needs. And Blue Apron's freshness guarantee promises that every ingredient arrives ready to cook or they'll make it right.
Some of the meals available in August include basil pesto chicken with summer vegetable panzanella, sauteed shrimp, green beans with globe tomatoes, spinach, and orza pasta, whole grain pasta and summer vegetables because it's summer with heirloom tomato caprese salad, miso butter salmon and lo mein noodles with cucumber and charm tomatoes, and finally, certainly not least, meatball pizza with fresh mozzarella cheese and charm tomatoes.
You can check out this week's menu and get your first 3 meals for free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/owns.
You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait.
That's blueapron.com/owns. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Today's show is sponsored by ZipRecruiter.
Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates?
Finding great talent can be tough.
Thankfully, with ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100 plus job sites with just one click.
Then their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job better than everyone else.
That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, over 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard.
Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free.
Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/OWNS. That's ZipRecruiter.com/owns.
One more time. To try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/owns.
So, Haley, tell us about your album, Seven, and what you wrote all the songs about. Song of Ice and Fire.
Yeah, that's a thing.
Well, I mean, you love the story enough to do that and yeah. to put a band of people together to make music and to come to a convention, you know, to do all that you guys have done for yeah. it. So what's it like for you watching the show? Like, do you feel that way? Or are you feeling that way because it's so fresh? Like, did you ever feel this way about episodes in the past? Is this a new feeling?
Definitely picking things apart more as it's gone on, I suppose. Right. I don't know. The thing that made me write music about it is because of emotional resonance that I had with characters, because that's what the record's about. It's about, like, sort of universal emotions and struggles and isolation and stuff like that. That happens to be in a fantasy setting. And that's what I've always found really beautiful about it. So I don't know. I tend to really feel like stressed out when things seem rushed on the show. That's mm-hmm. all.
That's a good way to put it.
We're crunched for time. You can feel the weight of that.
I think it's compelling though. Like, I'm so excited to turn on the episodes on Sunday. It's what's going to happen?
Oh my God. Yeah, no, totally. And I love it. I've enjoyed watching all of this, and this past episode, it did get me emotionally in a lot of places, and it got me super psyched in those last, whatever, 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. At a level that I don't think I've had in a bit. I don't remember a scene like that that has got me like...
Hard Home, maybe.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Hard Home probably was the one. But yeah, like white knuckle kind of
crazy
ending. Mm-hmm. So
this just like Tyrion when he was attacked by the Stone Men in Old Valyria when he went into the water and faded to black.
Yes,
I was half expecting like it to fade back up and have Jorah like rescue Oberon or somebody. The same
with yeah, with his brand new skin, uh-huh. great.
Well, okay, so does it feel different to you being, you know, because you've studied Song of Ice and Fire more than most people because of how intricate you have to write lyrics for these characters. And so the story, blah, 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 like how having, with what Hannah said about having the story going to the places that it's going now without having those book references, do you feel like you're nitpicking if something doesn't sit right because it maybe would be done differently or deeper in the books? Or is it just because as a television show watcher, you just felt uncomfortable while you're watching, or maybe you felt like they could have done something different? Or is that even the case?
I don't know. I don't think I'm actually terribly nitpicky in general. But like I know like pretty much everyone I know is obsessed with this show and with these books. And, you know, I hear a lot of like super salty opinions about it all the time. I don't think that I'm that person. I think I'm much more optimistic about the whole thing. But yeah, I mean, sometimes things don't sit right. And I have strong feelings how I feel like certain characters should talk and behave, and like the kind of like beautiful prose that, you know, and dialogue that George wrote for these characters initially sometimes is missing. But, you know, like that's not really fair of me.
It's not fair.
Because
I know.
Like they're not mine. Just because I wrote some fucking like musical fan fiction about it. Like, it's not mine. So they can do whatever they want.
I don't know, Hannah.
I mean, how do you feel? I feel like you've been asking us a lot of questions. How do you feel?
I feel like I've seen your range of emotions on this episode really change.
I thought it was amazing. I thought it was a marvel. I like the fanfare, the tweets, you know, the community of our podcast and other shows and websites and just in general, just the zeitgeist of GOT, like every time a new episode comes out and it accomplishes what it accomplished here, I feel like I'm one of the biggest sincere cheerleaders for the series because of it. And I sincerely do love it. I think that's why that awkward moments or things that I feel like aren't at the normal level of their polish when it happens, it sticks out and lands because, you know, we've got this is the 378th episode of the podcast. So we do look at things closely. And I know a lot of our listeners do as well. We just had 4 amazing listeners on the show on our last podcast, and they were smarter and more dialed into the context of the way things are working together and how to talk about it with us on the podcast as well. I was just so impressed by how much people care about the series when something like doesn't sit well or when something doesn't quite land. I think it really sticks out. And now instead of it happening with a tertiary character in a place like Harrenhal, it's happening in a place like Winterfell with our favorite characters, the top build cast, Arya, Sansa.
That's true.
You know? And so it matters.
And we're so protective of those Stark girls.
Exactly. Like, exactly.
I want it to be perfect. And like what you said, Hannah, about just like wanting George to be able to have that moment of like Arya and Sansa meeting again. Like, I get it.
Yeah. That all this to say, though, I totally agree in the sense of we can still love Fuel the Fire 2.0/Loot Train, whatever we're supposed to call it. I think that because we love the series so much, we can take a step back and look at these moments that we don't think sit well while still loving every moment of the season. Because as you're talking about the level of enthusiasm and participation from just the community has been unrivaled. And so I think even in these moments when we're critical, and I'm so excited to talk about it with you guys, it still is this incredible spectacle that I don't want to not be appreciative of, you know? I feel like it's such a hard balance, I think, sometimes to find.
Feels dirty.
Yeah.
I don't like watching it and not liking something, you know? I really don't like that. I was watching American Gods a few days ago. It's a great show, you know? But, I mean, we're talking, I mean, is not, they're just, no one is playing in the same realm, in the same realm as these people.
Yeah.
David and Dan and Brian and people like Ramin and people like Paula, and her work shot through so much in this episode.
Oh my
God. Drogon's wings and his roars. People like that work on this series, they don't go home at closing time, you know, like they stay until 8:30, or Paula works in her house. She has an Atmos studio in her house and she works on this at home, and she buys bones and goes out in the desert with her shotgun microphone to hear sand because it sounds cool. And because she cares about her art form.
Yeah.
And Ramin, I know, like, because we spoke to him last summer, I know how excited he is about this. And so he also understands the responsibility of going into S7 and Jaime and Tyrion standing a couple hundred yards from each other. And then, oop, Drogon lands and there's Daenerys as well. He understands. They're excited. You can tell, like, that they get to do this. And so it all blends so seamlessly together. And so I guess just to put a button on this, because I know that I was surprised when you resonated with what I was feeling earlier, Hannah, in the episode. I was like, oh man, like maybe it's not just me, you know? Maybe it's not just me. And I thought it might have been because it's easy to get kind of lost in the noise, but the show is batting on a level that I've never seen before. So it's even easier to look at small exchanges that don't quite work as well as Bronn and that scorpion.
Oh,
like,
my God, yeah.
When he kicked the thing and the doors fall down, it's like, show me a movie that has a better sequence than that.
Yeah.
Or when Bronn is walking with that long tracking shot.
Yeah, through just the flames and like, that's just incredible.
And he pulls the sword out of the guy's body and starts fighting with it.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
He's got a guy like hunting him down, like Jon was getting chased down by the White Walker at Hardhome.
Yeah.
That overhead shot when Dany cut through the ranks of the Lannister men and they're riding through like Stannis's column attacking the wildlings in season 4.
Yeah.
All of these different things that they're like, all these themes that they're repeating on each. It's masterful.
Yeah. And next level too. So
that too.
Yeah.
While also being the most popular show for the coolest book series written by a pretty damn cool dude.
Yeah.
So
look how much we like everything.
Yeah.
I know. There's one last little moment I want to talk about before we get to our owns that I would be remiss if we didn't bring up. One thing I think they did do very well, and when we talk about playing to an audience who's smart and knows what's going on. The small moment and mention of the Golden Company that Qyburn has been speaking with was really, really cool and intriguing. And so let's talk about how we can subtly play these big themes into this theory. And I felt like slipping the Golden Company in there was very interesting.
Makes me feel good for book plot.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know?
Also, Qyburn's Hand of the Queen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Qyburn's Dragon Cannon works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Their plans work. The men, Tychonostorus is talking to Cersei, and he's like, he basically tells her straight up, you're smarter and more strategic than Tywin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. Yeah. She like kind of got everything she wanted.
I mean, what a damn move.
Yeah.
To pay them back all at once. I mean, sorry, Dany showed up and probably melted most of the gold into the sand, but. Right. Wow.
No, I think all of it made it.
Did it?
Didn't, what's his name, Randall, come up and tell Jaime that it had made it into King's Landing, the gold?
Ooh. Or
I watched this episode at 6 o'clock in the morning, so who knows?
First car of the loot train made it, but, and the rest was incinerated.
Right. Maybe. If it did make it, great. I thought that her plans might have been disrupted. I need to watch it again. Maybe, I would say tweet us, but... we'll probably know by then.
Yeah.
Like right after recording,
I'm going to look this up. Someone to find out. Yeah.
Also, if you still just want to tell us, that's fine too. But maybe that happens. So her plans aren't disrupted.
I don't know.
So if they're not disrupted, that would mean what? That the Iron Bank got its due and that they're going to lend them the money to hire the Golden Company to fight Dany and the Targs and to also fight.
Yeah. I guess if the gold did make it to King's Landing, then what was the point of that battle? If Jaime doesn't die, which I'm just stating as fact, and the gold made it into King's Landing, I guess maybe just like a show of strength, but I guess Dany didn't really necessarily accomplish anything strategic if both of those things happened. But IDK.
I think the whole, yeah, I mean, I feel like the whole point of her striking there was just show of strength, honestly.
Yeah, because that could be reason enough.
She opted not to go to King's Landing, so it was like.
Surely they knew that.
She needed to just show off a dragon.
And be like, we all needed it. She needed it. We needed it.
Yeah.
God, that footage. That shot where he's wide. It's wide angle, and it's from the Drogon's from the side, and he's blasting down that column of flame about 50 feet high, and everyone's blowing up from the ground.
Yeah.
Like flying in the air from the sheer terrible force of his fire breath.
Yeah. It's Trogdor the Burninator. That's great.
Jaime and Bronn are going to be captives unless they stay at the bottom of the water and like use reeds to breathe and like escape.
Well, yeah, I guess I'm assuming that Jaime's going to be somebody's captive again.
I mean, time does repeat itself.
It does.
Maybe he'll get muddy again.
Maybe Brienne will come back.
Oh, yeah. Take a bath.
Oh my God. Yes. Can they take another bath?
Oh, yeah, they can.
Season 8.
I hear the spring is wonderful in the Sapphire Isles. What does a Jaime Bronn captivity situation look like with Tyrion, being the hand and their captor?
And what is Cersei's reaction to that? I think is also an interesting question.
Yeah.
Something I am looking forward to and hoping that we will get to see is Tyrion and Jaime interacting with each other and having some sort of conversation and some sort of moment between them. And so I think that if a captive situation does end up happening, it would be really neat to see the two of them interact at this point in the game.
Mm-hmm.
It would be flip side.
Yeah.
It would be Tyrion talking to Jaime being imprisoned and Tyrion like knowing and understanding Jaime as much as Jaime did.
Yeah.
When Tyrion was the guy caught, except it's, he's got the power now. So what is he going to do?
Mm-hmm.
Because you know what Jaime did for him?
Yeah.
Do they take Jaime back to Dragonstone?
Tell him about Tysha.
I don't know.
That'd be weird.
I don't know.
Or does he stay at the bottom of the lake and just gets out of it?
He can't stay there forever.
Jaime is a merman.
Confirmed. Speaking of Varys on the beach with Tyrion and his legs, couldn't stop looking at it.
Before we move on to Eastwatch and all the things that we can't wait to see, I think it's time for us to give our owns of the spoils of war.
What's your own, Hannah?
My own, I have thought long and hard about what moment I want to give my own to. And I think that I want to give it to Daenerys and Missandei talking about Grey Worm. Because I love that we get the two of them are powerful, making moves, running the game, doing amazing things, doing amazing sweeties. Just it's been really cool to see them in real positions of power, finally accomplishing everything they want to, even if there's a couple mishaps along the
and
way.
And looking great with mm-hmm. that three-headed dragon brooch. Ooh. Sorry, Hannah, just want to say it.
But to have them walking and chatting about how they haven't yet heard from the Unsullied and they haven't heard from Grey Worm, and they both kind of, Missandei alludes to the fact of everything that happened before Grey Worm left, and they both kind of smirk at each other and just give each other these looks of, we need to have a conversation. I just felt like it was such a cool, genuine moment.
It was so cool.
That's a moment I would have with any one of my girlfriends. So own to Danny and Missandei, because I thought that was such a nice little 30 seconds between the two of them.
Hailey Bowery, we need your own. You're next.
My own goes to the Dothraki screamers finally living their best life.
Yes. Sweeties.
Like standing on horses, screaming.
They loved it.
They've literally been like waiting for this for so long now.
On their wooden horses.
Yeah. Oh God. They hated that.
They didn't like it. I bet they were sick the whole time.
Oh, God. Yeah. Of course.
That's perfect.
Excellent own. The Lannister guard shaking.
Oh, God.
I was just as scared.
Yeah.
Holy Drogon. Okay. I want to give my own to the fan community, but I'm not going to. But I still am.
That's very sweet.
Last night was so fun. We recorded your podcast, Drinking Game of Thrones, and it was a totally different experience for a Sunday night for me. Hannah was seeing Coldplay or Train. We can't quite put our finger on it.
Could be either.
How long ago did you make those plans, Hannah? And how nice is it the fates and the seven gods and all the old gods and Bacchalon and the list goes on, the Pale Child? How to get it all worked out in this way? How long ago did you book that ticket?
Maybe a year and a half ago, like forever ago.
Wow.
And the listeners on Twitter participating and owns, this was, the bar has been, we've been saying it progressively every week, but the bar has been raised so high. Like, I don't think it could get more fun than what last night was. So thank you for that experience, everyone. Sincerely, from the bottom of my heart, it was really fun. And I'm sad that Hannah got to miss out on it. I had to miss out on it, but.
Aww. But she was enjoying
it. It's okay. Yeah. I was living my life.
She was back in the atmosphere. I'm going to give my own to Bronn for being the hero and the villain at the same time and carrying it only like Bronn could.
Mm-hmm.
Only like Bronn could. And for having the audacity to demand Highgarden from Jaime.
It's true.
The sheer audacity, the nerve of Bronn, the nerve. Own to you.
Yeah, he's got some big swinging balls.
I love you.
Yep. He also made that ballista look cool when Qyburn made it look so lame. Dumb.
I know, that's so true. That's so true.
Tertiary own to Qyburn's dragon cannon,
Dragon corner.
That's totally what
And his dragon corner. And thank you again to all of you who have been sending in your owns. We have a couple days until we're recording our next episode of the week. And it is going to be so fun, because this episode, I feel like we've got so many more small moments to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also going to be just a cascade of those owns from Sunday night that we've also got to talk about. And I'm really excited. If you'd like to send in your own and participate with us on our next episode, here's how.
You can tweet at us at Game of Owns, or you can find us on Facebook by searching for Game of Owns. Or if you would like to, you can send us an email to contact@gameofowns.com.
And I think we should mention that we've been putting together a Westerosi mixtape, if you could call it that, every week for the season at westerrock.com. And we've been featuring your music on it, because you wrote an album called Seven and you played at Con Thrones, and you guys are making videos and it's so fun. If you should go listen to that, to Haley's band.
It'll get you so hype.
You guys are so good. And the care that you put into translating the story into music is just, you know, we can't do that. We could make hundreds of podcast episodes and it still wouldn't be that, you know? It's so cool.
The thing that you guys do is so fucking cool too. So, but thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming on the podcast. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you for having me.
Mm-hmm. Hannah, you going to help me here?
You're doing amazing. No, I have been so excited to talk to both of you for hours. And so, Haley, it's been such a blast to have you. I feel like, I mean, as Zach was saying, you have this ability to break down the characters into music. And I think that that's so incredible. And so your understanding of the series, it's been such a blast to talk about such an important episode together. And so appreciate you taking the time to hang out with us.
Thank you so much, Hannah. So nice. This has been super fun.
Let's do it again.
Yeah.
Sound good?
Anytime.
Okay.
I wanted to thank all of you for listening and for participating and for sending in your owns and for hanging out with us on Twitter and on Facebook. As we have said a million times this episode, having the opportunity to do this all together and to participate and to analyze and to make hilarious jokes, and the memes that we get sent are
the memes.
They are my favorite thing about everything we get to do. And so thank you so much for listening and for participating and for watching. It means the world to us that we get to do this together.
You're doing amazing, sweeties.
You're all doing amazing.
Pack up those rollerblades.
We'll be back later this week with another episode where we get to dive into a little bit more about what happened. And we'll be posting, as always, questions on our social media and on Watchers if you want to answer some of our discussion questions and be part of that conversation as we break down all of the 10 million amazing moments that we barely had the chance to scratch the surface of today.